joining our show today.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. My name is Wanda McKinley, along with your co-host, Stephanie Kennedy Alford. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization for abused men, women, and children. Our goal is to provide a stable environment for battered individuals by providing temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help men and women transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower and to show that victims can and will survive and thrive in society, and to also uplift them and provide them with a new life and with a new perspective of a normal life should be by giving them the tools that they need. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive. And I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help men, women, and children who have walked or even may still be walking in my shoes. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
I am wonderful. What about yourself?
I think I'm a little bit sleepy. It's been a lot going on. So I'm excited to get into all the things that we, all the events that we have coming up. But can you start off with telling us about our fundraising?
Okay, we currently have several fundraisers. We have a Kroger Plus Rewards Card. If you currently have a Kroger Plus Rewards Card, we'd love for you to connect with We Are Survivors. So if you go to Kroger's.com and you start typing in We Are, then it should pull up We Are Survivors. And if you click the little button, it should connect you to We Are Survivors. And each quarter, when you spend your money shopping with Kroger's, then we'll get a donation according to what you spend. If you don't have a Kroger Plus Rewards card, if you will go and get a Kroger Plus Rewards card and do the same thing to connect it, then we'll get a donation each quarter. We also do the Tom Thumb Rewards. If you go to TomThumb.com and print their form out and connect it to We Are Survivors, the same thing, according to what you spend each month. If any of those, along with the CPN discount card, it's $15. If you contact me, my number is 817-320-2571. You can call or text me. I'd be happy to get you connected on any or all of those. And then we also do the Compass Bank. If you have a Compass Bank account, according to what you spend from your account, they'll also send us a donation. And then we have the one with the photography. And because one of you've already taken those beautiful pictures, I'm gonna let you explain that one.
Why? Thank you. And I do want to say someone has actually connected with the Kroger Plus card. Because I did get a quarterly statement, and we actually had some money that was raised from the Kroger Plus card. So I thank those that are listening and that are taking the time out to actually attach their cards to We Are Survivors to help out. I want to go into our Purple City Project, which is a domestic violence awareness photo shoot campaign. The photographer is Charles, a.k.a. City, and the purpose behind this, the proceeds of the photo shoot will be donated to We Are Survivors. So when we receive a phone call from a male or a female that is in an abusive situation and is trying to leave, that we will be able to put them up in a room for a night or two. So those funds are really important, because if you're on the other end of a phone call and hearing someone in distress and doing everything you can to help them and can't, it's really heartbreaking. So I really do, like I said, appreciate anyone and everyone that is helping out in these fundraising events. There are four different packages, but I'll just go ahead and discuss the first two. The first one is valued at $100, and it is for $55. It is a 20-minute session for up to four people, unlimited pictures, one outfit, and two edits. And the two edits means you get to pick two pictures that you like, and after he fixes them up to his liking, then that's what you get to take home for $55. $80 package, which is valued at $160, you have a 45-minute session, up to four people, unlimited shots, two looks, which means you get to change clothes, and four edits. And you're able to pick top four pictures and, like I said, allow him to fix them up really nice. And then that's what you would take home, those four edits for $80. And it's really very hard to pick just one or two or three or four. Really hard. I also want to go into some of the events that We Are Survivors are a part of. And our calendar changes, I would say, almost daily, but it does at least change once a week. And I just want to let people know, if you do follow us on Facebook, then you will see some of these events posted. Others may not be posted, but I'm going to go through what we have so far on the calendar. For June 18th, there will be a Juneteenth celebration at Southwest Center Mall, and I do believe that's from 10 a.m. or 10:30 to either 4 or 4:30. And that is June 18th, which, of course, is Saturday, for the Juneteenth celebration at Southwest Mall. June 21st, We Are Survivors is part of a Fabulous City on the Runway Fashion Show. And that's at Hilton in Duncanville from 11 to 2:30. That is a scholarship fundraising event. The tickets are $30 and includes the fashion show, which is really nice. They have a wings section, active summer wear, evening, and business attire. And there's going to be a lot of different models, so that's going to be really fun. So that ticket price is $30, which includes a very nice meal. June 21st through August 4th. This will be working with the City of Dallas regarding a summer reach outreach program. The date to begin may change, and that's going to be every Tuesday and Thursday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. June 29th, a very important meeting with the City of Lancaster. We're going to be planning our first We Are Survivors Domestic Violence Walk. So we're really excited about that opportunity that's coming. July 9th, we have a health fair at Strong Arms Church in Pleasant Grove. That is from 8 a.m. to 12. July 23rd, there is a Celebrating Life Afternoon Delight Lunch, and that's in Cedar Hill, and that's for women. It is a free lunch. You have to register because there is going to be a head count. And it's Silent Screams, which is another nonprofit organization. We've had the founder on this show before. It's Silent Screams Incorporated. Like I said, that event, I don't think you want to miss it. It's going to be a delight. And it's actually, like I said, Celebrating Life Afternoon Delight Lunch, and it's in Cedar Hill. Then August 13th, we have My Sister's Keeper Unity Party. That's going to be in Arlington. That's for girls age 7 to about 18. And that's really going to be talking about bullying, mentoring, fighting, domestic violence, just a lot of different things to help our young girls. And dads are encouraged to also come. And the tickets right now for the teenagers, for the girls, are free. I think for the adults, they're like $20, the early tickets. That's an event you don't want to miss. August 20th, is our We Are Survivors second annual benefit event, which is going to be in Addison from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. It's going to be I Say Fellowship in Paint, others know it as Sip and Paint. And the tickets are $50. That does include your meal, your paint supplies, and your picture that you paint. So for $50, you get your meal, your drink, which will include water, tea, or soda, and then all of your paint supplies, your paint, your apron, as well as the picture that you paint. So that's going to be August 20th. Then August 25th through the 28th, We Are Survivors will be guests at the International Women's Conference that is in Finland. Then we have October 1st, which again will be our first quarterly empowerment event that will also be in Addison, the same location as our second benefit event, and we're going to get together and, like I said, fellowship, paint, laugh, play games, have awesome police officers, those police officers come out, give us tips regarding protecting ourselves and safety, which is our number one concern, safety. Then October 22nd, the actual sponsor of this radio show, Granny's Place, have a women's conference in Duncanville from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that again is October 22nd. So we will be speaking and doing some workshops during that conference. Then, actually, November 19th, We Are Survivors has been invited to the Margarita Ball. And for those who know, that's the huge fundraising event that is invitation only. That, again, is November 19th. And the last day so far is on our calendar is actually our organization formation day, and it's December 22nd. December 22nd will be our two-year anniversary. We're really, really excited about that. God has opened so many doors in such a very short period of time. One thing that is not, that I did not mention because we don't have dates, but We Are Survivors has also been asked to do a tour in Africa to go around and once again mentor and talk to young ladies and young girls and just give them a platform to show them that they can do and will do whatever they set their minds to do. So as we get more information with that, we will also share. I think that is all that I had to talk about when it comes to the different things that We Are Survivors are involved into. So I want the community to know that We Are Survivors is really busy. We are really out and about in the community. We are really being noticed, and people are really taking us seriously, which is an awesome thing. So I really want our listeners to also do the same. And like I said, one way you can do that is by participating with one of the fundraising events that Stephanie mentioned earlier in the show. We do now have a VP, a Vice President of Fundraising and Event Planning. And with her being on the team, we're going to be planning a lot of different events throughout the year. One of the things that we are discussing is a golf tournament. So there will be a lot of different events throughout the year that you can show your support with We Are Survivors. And trust me, it's not about us. It's about that phone call. It's about that child. It's about that man and or that woman that picks up the phone and reaches out to We Are Survivors for help. We just want to be in a situation where we can actually help them and provide the help they need. And if we cannot do it, at least we will be equipped to get them the help by somebody, by using references and resources, which is also very important. Well, enough. I am excited again. This young man is, his story, I think he needs to start writing, because he has a story to tell. And as you all have listened, part one, part two, part three, now we're on part four. And there is so much that this young man has gone through and have overcome, and still from day to day, because I know I can speak from experience and say from experience, still deal with things that occurred to us in our past. So just because we are talking about our past doesn't mean that it doesn't affect us to this day. Our past affects who we are, affects our decisions, it affects how we treat people, it affects us day to day. But to be able to survive it and talk about it and educate and help other people is what helps us understand even more so why God chose us to go through what we went through and survive it in such a manner that we are able to speak out loud. Because there are survivors that are not able to even speak about what they went through. They are still in a place where they are very uncomfortable to even speak the words, because speaking it actually gives it life. By speaking it, you acknowledge that these things actually occurred to me. And for someone to actually say it out loud, that takes so much from them because you're reliving. I know for me, every time I say what I say, I'm reliving it. So there are some survivors that choose not to speak upon it. There are some survivors that it has affected them so much that they really are in a space in their life where they're seeking even more so, more help. So I do thank Sweeten for sharing his unbelievable story, for taking the time out to not only share but educate. Not only and by educating us, because you're sharing the things that you experienced and what you went through. And not only are you doing that, but what I have noticed is why you're doing that, you are also explaining what you learned from that behavior and how, by you learning from that behavior, how you've adjusted and changed things in your life because you actually stood back and said, okay, I know this was wrong. I know this is what I was doing. I know the reason why, but I can still make it better by changing. So I do want to thank you for doing that much. For a lot of times we tell our story, but we don't go into how our story and our past has helped us change the way our present and our future will be. So I'm going to allow you to go ahead and pick up from there.
Okay. The last time that I did remember us talking with you and Miss Stephanie, I was at, I think, when I finally got a chance to go out on dates with my girlfriend. And I'm talking about the girlfriend that I am married to now, because the other ones was just like a splat. It was, you know, the promiscuous lifestyle was so fast, you know, it's hard to remember a lot, but it's a lot that I do remember. So you're right, I do need to write. But yes, our first date was definitely at a crack house. And it just never dawned on me. You know, like, oh my God, you know, do I have this woman here at a crack house with me? And, you know, like I said, the next door, it was a hole in the wall so you can basically walk to the next house connected. And she saw the traffic and everything that was going on around it. But she, you know, she never questioned it. She wasn't scared or anything of it, but, you know, now that I look at it, it's kind of like, wow, you know what I mean? Certain dynamics don't mean, like, every person that's from the hood doesn't mean they're not scared of everything, because this girl didn't grow up in the urban hood mentality or the lifestyle, and she wasn't scared of it at all. What said a lot to me in spoken volumes, because I knew something was going on with her, father's with abuse or just in her past, because she is a tough girl. But I was just in that life at that moment where right when I met her, I didn't have a job, and I was in the process of looking for one. So basically, anything that came, you know, my way, whether it was working at McDonald's or selling crack, one or the other or both would have been the option. But, you know, nothing was coming at that time. So, you know, I took what I can take and to survive. I let that woman see everything. She, you know, she was the first woman that I became vulnerable with. Because I just knew it was something special about her, and I knew she was here to help me more so than to try to change me as well. But it just, some of those things just wouldn't stop, you know what I mean? It was, the more I try to, you know, go conservative, I guess I'll say, I'll still find myself, you know, hey, babe, let's go out. And then I'm somewhere in D.C. in a hood, and or at a park, and people smoking or drinking or, you know, whatever was in the situation. And I'm like, wow, you know, looking at it from the outside, it's like I just couldn't let the hood go, or that mentality that they say, with the environment. And she was into other things, though, you know, of course. So, but it was just, it was me on my perspective as far as what I was doing. And, yes, I was definitely into selling anything that I could to make money at that time. And it just became, it just happened so fast as far as with me and her when we first got together. In the midst of, you know, us going on dates and being out in areas I shouldn't have never had her in, she ended up getting an apartment in Baltimore because I was on the midst of being put out. You know, like I said, me and my family, I don't really get along too much with because of the abuse that I went through. So it was easy for them to, you know, basically kick me out or whatever the situation. And, you know, she automatically just said, hey, you know, come live with me. And it changed. It changed for me, Wanda, because it showed me this domestic lifestyle of, you know, have mm-hmm. I had apartments before my girlfriend? Yeah, of course. I mean, I had money to do it. But just living in that domestic lifestyle, not in violence, but just coming home and decorating and having pillows. And I just, it changed me. But it didn't change mm-hmm. It didn't change the animal that was in me. So now I understand, as a young kid, now that I'm older, how, I mean, you even talked about it, you know, you can walk into the nicest house of a person, but deep in their spirit or in their soul will tell you exactly who they are. And I just could not go the route that my wife wanted me to go because I was too busy on trying to survive and worried about the next dollar. You know, the next drug or the next dollar I can get to sell just to make sure that I have something because of my past of coming up and not having anything. And, you know, and I will tell her, you know, you ate tapioca pudding for months and baked potatoes, like one baked potato a day and tapioca pudding for months, like, you understand what I'm talking about. Sometimes it was nothing. You know, it was nothing. And she grew up, you know, poor too in her own ways. So mm-hmm. she could relate, but she just, I don't think she could relate to living in the city urban lifestyle in America. Cause she, you know, she's from Puerto Rico, but when she also came here, you know, she struggled as well. And, you know, it wasn't that much of a blur between going into 21 and 22 and 23 because, you know, we were together. And we was, you know, she had an apartment at that time. And I would bounce from staying with my mother in my brother's town home to going up to Baltimore to be with her to the point I just said, hey, I'm going to stay up there. And I made it official to, you know, try to live that, I guess what you call it, the grown, more, I was already a grown-up, but more what they call the settled-down, grown-up lifestyle. And the streets wouldn't let me go. At that age, no, the streets wouldn't let me go at all. Plus, I was also in the midst of this new light bulb hitting my head of I need to talk to people about being abused and molested and living on the streets, because something deep down inside was hurting me for the fact that my family didn't want to deal with it. So going through that, being in a relationship, dealing with that in my mind every day, also living on the streets, you can pretty much say that I was a bipolar person. Emotions are always vulnerable, and that was a bad thing on the streets. Not for me, though, but for that person. And I just could not get away. And it really kind of started getting bad after we left from Baltimore. That's when I talked to my mother and, you know, this, you know, hey, we have money, but can, you know, me and my girlfriend at this time still, can we, you know, get an apartment together? Because, you know, we both don't have a home.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. And, you know, I started seeing a lot of abuse from my mother, abusing my girlfriend when I wasn't home, until the day that I popped up on everybody and nobody didn't know I was coming home. And I found out she was verbally abusing my girlfriend. And I just started seeing the differences in my family at that moment. Questioning things, lies that I heard. In the midst of still, you know, being out in the streets and selling drugs or doing whatever I have to do. And right around, you know, when I got into the midst of that, living with my girlfriend, I went through this depression that I've never felt like no other. And I had this exterior where a lot of people would tell me, you know, even just the look on your face, you think you're just this big old mean teddy bear. But, you know, when you talk to me, you realize I'm just a teddy bear. But I'm still a bear, though. But I'm a teddy bear. And I did not know that I can be so soft in my emotions. And that when I, back then, I'm like, you know, soft little punk. Because that's all I would do once this depression hit. It just out the blue hit. And maybe, you know, I felt it as a kid or growing up because of everything that was already happened, I just didn't know what it was. But I knew it then, that moment. It hit me worse than a Lamborghini going 200 miles per hour.
Wow.
And I cried, and I cried. I stayed in my room. I remember one time I didn't take a bath, I think, for literally almost like a month. I just stayed in the bed. I would, you know, get up, brush my teeth, and then go right back to bed. To the point where I wasn't eating and I was gaining weight because my body started to depend on its own nutrition from my body. And stress and all of those things. And I decided to say, F it. I'm going to kill myself. And
wow.
I even remember waking up having a bad argument. It was a real bad argument with my girlfriend. And I waited till everybody left. And I went and go grab the gun. And I went to the kitchen because I felt the adrenaline rushing because I knew what I was going to do. It was going to happen regardless. And I took my last sip of water. And I went there and I sat down and I pulled it. I put it in my head and I pulled it. And it didn't go off, and I pulled it again. and it didn't go off. Mind you, this gun is fully loaded.
Wow.
Fully loaded in the clip, one in the chamber. And this gun did not go off. And I threw the gun. As I'm throwing the gun down, I do remember my neighbors with one of my cousins walking in and saying, "Man, what, you know, what the word is going on with you?" And they immediately called the police, grabbed the gun, and you know, called the police. And that's what they did from them telling me. But I just remember just throwing that gun, and that cry. They, you know, as my friend said, he said, "Man, that cry sounded like an ancestor cry." He said, "Because that cry was, it wasn't just because your feelings is hurt or just something has destroyed you. Something destroyed you, and you're trying to get it out." And from then on, it just kind of went a little bit of downhill. From all of that stress, that's when the diabetes kicked in, because like I said, my body is feeding off itself. Even though certain people in my family have it, but I basically gave it to myself from stress and not eating. But in the midst of the suicidal that day, you know, I ended up going back to the psych ward. They did a 96, I think it's like a 96-hour hold. So, within that hold, you know, I start learning a lot. But I knew that I wasn't crazy from the, you know, the way that I felt mentally and the way that I thought. But I was treated that way, you know, all through my life growing up. And I knew then that I needed to get help, but if I don't get it fast, I'm going to keep trying to kill myself. I'm going to definitely keep trying to kill myself. I just at this moment, even though I know I have a beautiful girl that is depending on me and needs me around, I needed to leave. So I come home from the psych ward of that, and after Christmas and all, I end up saying, "Hey, let's go get a whole bunch of pills and ecstasy pills, and let's see how what can happen if you swallow them all." And it did nothing to me, put me on a high for so many basically days. Because I'm a big dude, and I keep forgetting your tolerance is definitely big, a little bit higher, depending on your weight capacity. And it did nothing to me but just made me high for days. And I got sick, of course. And I got the message of being high while I was high, off of the pills, the aspirins, the ecstasy pills, and I better never, ever try this again. I don't know if it was my own spirit speaking to me, but I just, it was like deep, like heavy, heavy, heavy waters, like deep, like, "Don't you ever, ever try this again." And it scared me. And I made a vow that I wouldn't try that again. I'm going to try to live this out. And, you know, even fast forward tense and present tense, you know, sometimes when I do get depressed, I still feel like I just want to go home to my heavenly gate so I can walk through. And because it's a lot. But I still made that vow, and, you know, I went to started to get therapy, and, you know, still going through a lot of financial problems, you know, being with my girl. And we end up moving to another apartment, and it picked up again. And now I'm around 24, maybe, I think 24-ish, going into 25. And the finances just would not pick up. I couldn't find a job for nothing. And it was like, I'll get a job, and I'll get laid off due to, you know, last hire, first fire type of situation. Not because I'm just going in there and being crazy or belligerent, or I'm just losing jobs. And depression hit again, but I still try to hold on to this. I'm not going to try to kill myself. But in the midst of having finance issues and problems, instead of becoming suicidal, I became violent again.
Wow.
And I remember just one time my wife, and I'm the type of person, I don't like hearing people complain, especially if it's something that you can really do. Like, don't complain to me that you're hungry when there's food out there in the kitchen and you just don't want to cook. That is just, oh my God, that would just throw me through the window. But she was just complaining about finances, and, you know, she had a job. I'm the one that didn't have a job, but I just got so tired of her complaining about it. Even though she had the right to complain, I just got angry. And so I'm going on a robbing spree.
What?
And that's what I'm definitely going to do. And I didn't choose to not rob people, no. I choose to rob the plazas that's living right across the street from my apartment.
Oh,
12 in the 1 or 2 in the morning. I robbed the Sprint store. And basically right in front of the cops. And it was kind of like, I didn't even want to dare take it on a religious way, because it was like, God knows, and you know God is not going to allow you to do this. But at the same time, I was praying to God, like, God, I'm sorry. We're about to lose an apartment. We're about to be homeless again. There's no food. Like, in our refrigerator, there was the baking soda box. There was nothing in the cabinets. We had no, like, there was nothing. And the reason what led to this, though, like I said, I was always doing music, even since when I met her. And I got tired of eating McDonald's. That's one of the reasons why I don't eat McDonald's. One, because it's poisonous. People really do the research. And two, I ate it every day. I went out and prayed to God to let me just sell one of my mixtape CDs for $5. That would get me 4 burgers and 1 fry on the dollar menu so me and her can eat. And I just started getting sick from it. But in the midst, like I said, forget it. I'm going to go on a robbing spree. And if I happen to come in the midst of people, then so be it. But I'm tired of this. And I went to the first place, was the Sprint store. I got in there. I took every phone out there. I even took the demo phones, because if I can get a dummy to get a demo, you're not going to see me again. This was my mentality. So get that. Play it off with the people that I even knew that worked there the next day. You know, hey, we don't, I mean, it was to the point I was very smooth. There was no prints. It was nothing. And play it off. And then right after that, Ms. Wanda, now I'm going to the CVS.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to it. And then right after that, I'm hitting the Pet Boys that was right next to it. Then I'm hitting this place that was right, this was the whole plaza. Then I'm hitting the Sapphire Club, which used to be a 99-cent movie theater. Like, yep, if I can go in the Giant and I know I can rig the ATM, I'm about to go do that too. And it just kept going and going. And mind you, I don't know if you remember when I told you in the first interview, I've been through a lot of stuff, and the only thing I know there was a guy is for the fact that I never did any big time for the stuff that I've done. Because everything was wrong, but it was definitely for a necessity. I would never rob a person for a pair of Jordans. I would never rob a store. I never robbed people. And I robbed people, but just far as on the malice of a mindset, when I got old enough. Young, yes. You're young and dumb. But this time it was, I need to sell all of these phones so I can pay my rent and get food. And I don't need these clothes no more and all of that. And that's what it was. Mind you, I have one of the biggest families in PG County, Maryland. Like, we're in the newspaper. We're in the thousands. If I give you all the branches to my family that's by blood, we're in the thousands, like 10,000s.
Mm.
And I couldn't get not one family member to come and help. Okay. And right after that situation happened, that's when I got sick. Because after all of this stuff happened, it was kind of like God said he's going to play with my life and say, well, now I'm going to find a way for you to get a job. After I got all of these phones in my house, computers, and now you want to give me a job. So I ended up getting a job at my high school that I graduated from, which is Law Senior High in Law, Maryland. And, you know, just fast-forwarding a little case, I ended up doing janitorial work. I got paid very well. It just so happened that I had a boss that was from prison, but I can tell his mindset because I live with a man from prison. They're very abusive, but they also can be passive-aggressive and abusive with their passiveness, too. And definitely how they talk to people or when they think they have the upper hand. And I'm one of those people that I don't care if you even fought the devil. I'm not scared to fight you. I'm not. I don't care who you are. And one of these guys will just play with my nerves or subliminal things and giving out messages. And he would just treat me like dirt. And we went to work. I went to work one day, and he told me to, I need you to sandpaper the floor. Now, I know these schools were built in the 60s. So back in the day, all of the tiles basically means they was using asbestos tiles, which back mm-hmm. in the day they thought those was good, but then, of course, they're not good. So I'm telling him, like, dude, I can't sandpaper these. He's like, no, you know, you even do that, you know, it's your job. So me trying to be responsible, of course I'm not going to lose my job. My wife needs help. My girlfriend, when I was calling her my wife, she needs help. So I did it anyway. Within weeks, literally maybe 2 weeks, I started getting these weird and bad headaches. Up until one day I was at work and I fainted. But I caught myself. It happened literally like maybe 1 second. I fainted and came right back. And I told him that I had to go to the hospital. So I don't feel right. I don't remember driving to the hospital, but I know I drove because the car was there. And when I got there, and they finally put me on a gurney. They said that's when I passed away. And I don't remember any of that. I just remember, wow, I'm crying. I just remember having some of the best sleep in my life. And it wasn't just sleep. It felt like whatever you feel on your happiest day, whether it's love or that mixed with sleep. And I did not want to wake up. I did not want to wake up. I remember a little bit just feeling like I'm in this, and people even do it in their sleep when you really dream, but your body is uh-huh. also conscious, but your body is also conscious in the dream. And
yeah.
I was doing that. The doctor said she remembered me kind of doing that in and out. She knew I was dead, and my body was coming back like I can talk. But knowing I was going back out, like, because I didn't, like, I think that's more in my spirit said, I didn't want to leave. I just didn't want to leave. This is the same, time, like I said, I called my mom and said, hey, I'm going to the doctor's. I don't think something's right with me. And she didn't even want to get out the pool to come and see if her son is okay. So, right then and there, I end up coming to. I blacked out again, came to again, and when I came to again, the nurse, she was a Jamaican lady, because I remember her possible accent. And she said, oh, he's up. Oh, thank you, Lord, he's up. And I blacked out again. And when I came back this time, my wife was sitting there just looking at me. And after that, I stayed there. Because I think a part of me, when I went out and came to again and I didn't see my wife, I probably would have just said, forget it. Because I think spiritually I had that control at that moment. Did I want to leave or did I want to stay? And that's the weirdest feeling that I ever don't want to feel until I get old, because now I know what older people say. Well, I just grew up in that family where a lot of the older people in my family said, well, I know I'm not going to be here too long, because they know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of them not even sick. They just don't want to be here, and they make their bodies spiritually just decompose. And I decided to stay up, of course. And it was a challenging time. I would definitely say, at that moment of coming back. But I also knew then too, I definitely needed more help with depression, because I was dealing with it right then and there too at that moment. Coming back, understanding, even with all of this, the dying and all, I'm depressed. So something is going on. And ever since then, it's just been a battle, even up till today, because I still do therapy, which I will be doing tomorrow, to talk about it. Coming into, out of that, the 25 and going into like 26 and 27, that's when, I definitely still had bad times, but my spirit was kind of like dying down of a little things, but the depression is all still was there. It just wasn't a lot of things happening no more. I was through with the music, I started traveling a lot, seeing a lot of things, different cultures, different countries, cities, and that started opening my eye on happiness. Not because I'm doing it through music, but seeing other people. And I knew then too, even with my music, I want to help, or somehow try to find a way to help. And I've been on that path since I was basically like 26. And, going into that time of that hard frustration, and around that time still, the streets were still there, Miss Wanda. Because no matter, even after that, the death and all, we even ended up moving back to D.C. and I couldn't find a job for 2 years. I'm getting in arguments with my wife. It's like, you're not looking for jobs. I don't believe you. And she one day saw all of these receipts and application receipts, basically, in my email that I've been filling out. And she didn't even know. Like, I went on 32 job interviews one time in 3 months. 32
jobs. That is a lot. That's a lot.
It was either, I think it was 3 or 4 months. But that is a lot. And I couldn't find a job. So what do you think I had to do? But the first thing that I was taught, I went right back to selling drugs. And I said the H-E-L-L with it. I'm not going back until I know for sure there's a job calling for me. Because maybe I'm just not worthy of one. I'm not good enough. I still got a college. I still have college under my belt. It doesn't matter. I'm filling out the job, driving job. I've been filling out a job for McDonald's, and they tell me the the dude told me that I overqualified for the pay. So, to my education, that means if I overqualify for the pay, then I know I can at least start off as manager or supervisor, and I don't even need the top pay. I'll take a cut. And they still didn't want to do it. So it was like, I'm not about to sit here and one thing, I know if I'm still going to make a vow that I'm going to stay healthy mentally to not try to kill myself, then I know I'm sure it's going to go homeless. So by any means necessary, I took my last $300 check, and I didn't look back no more. And this is around 26 now. I'm 33. And Ms. Wanda, I didn't look back. And I want you to hear me when I'm about to say, I did not look back until I found out that I had to move to Texas 3 years ago. So all the way up to 30 years old, I was making money. When I moved here, after paying all the school loans, and because that's what I did it for. I'm not a tennis shoe buyer, drug dealer, if I was going to be. I was paying loans off and all of that. And when I moved here, I had over $57,000. And that's when I said, I'm going to push a reset button on my life. I was cursing at myself, but we were on the radio. So, yeah. In D.C., from 26 all the way up to 30, I was living a lifestyle, once again, that I've already built for myself at 12 years old. And moving around. And I blocked it, the drugs, selling. And this is so crazy. People thought I was selling narcotics. I was just selling marijuana at that time. But that's how much money I was making. And that's how much, I'm not trying to be funny, how many politicians, I hope the radio hears that, how many politicians and white people smoke marijuana in D.C. as well. And I was hanging with the best of the best. Like I said, politicians. I knew certain mayors, old mayors, mayor's kids, old drug dealer, kingpin's kids, because I'm related to some of them. And I had this lifestyle where, like you said, I'm a shoe fanatic. Oh, I'm a shoe fanatic. I'm so much of a shoe fanatic, I can recognize women's shoes as well. And I blinded myself by taking trips and flying and still involving the money that I'm making with my music to take trips to, you know, I did tours and, you know, all types of stuff. And I just blinded myself. I never looked back. And the money was coming in to the point my wife was just getting scared. And she was like, she didn't really know what I was doing because she was at work every day. All she knew is when I come home, I have hundreds or thousands of dollars. And my quota every day, Ms. Wanda, was $2,000.
Wow.
Every day. So that was how much money I was making, but I also had to buy more and to make more and to keep the cycle going. So that's how much money I was making. That was my quota. If I didn't hit that by 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock that morning, then I'm done. And then once I hit that quota, I'm definitely cutting my phone off because I don't need to keep the traffic coming through my phone. Because I wasn't a dummy dealer either. I mean, I was taught by some of the best people. So, you know, by that being taught to me, though, also as a young kid, being a young trafficker, for my father, having it in the fanny packs, and it was easy. It was very easy, but it was a dangerous world for me because it wasn't like, not trying to be funny here, what I see down here in the South. Certain people that are selling drugs down here in the community are doing it just in their community. To where in D.C., like I say, you can live in a city and live in a certain hood, but you don't know who can be driving through D.C. because it's so small. if you sit on a certain type of part of a hill in D.C., you can look at the White House, the Capitol, the monuments, and everything because it's that small. So it was no problem for me to get caught up in the politicians and, oh, boy, so many things. And but that lifestyle brought back a lot to me, too, as well, because with the drugs, I also found sex. Not me having it, because I was still faithful to my wife, but it was just looking at it. Like politicians, hey, I need you to meet me here. Now I'm in a club, and it's a strip club. Or, oh, now it's a swingers club, and then it's a bar. And then, hey, you want a drink? No, I'm not one of these type of people. So the devil was trying to follow me, too, with my molestation to see if I would fit in. Or break myself. Yeah, I'm selling weed, but you're going to invite me to a bar where you got men humping on men, women humping on women, or men humping on women and women humping on men. Or literally women humping men. We don't have to go into detail.
Wow.
So, and that's where I looked at it. I said, I would never forget to sit in that club. I said, God, I need a sign and I'm ready to go. And I said, this makes me feel like I want to go home to you. I said, but I'm not that dumb. You brought me very far now. And I was grasping onto the life thing. And I said, I need you to make a move for me. And in 3 months, my wife got a call saying, hey, I got to go to California, and then from there I'm going to Dallas.
I was
recording 3 albums as this happened. And while I was recording it, I looked at my house. I said, I got to stop packing. Everybody said, what in the world is you talking about? 2 days later, my wife called me. She said, you want to know something? I said, I already started. So when you come home, let's just get it on. And when I came home, I was packing up to move to Dallas. And June 9th of 2013, is when I went to go kiss my goddaughter on her head. And she just came in the world. And I drove to Texas and came here. And got here at June 9th, 2013. And ever since then, I've been working at Dallas schools and helping kids professionally and outside of my boundaries of professionalism. Not saying being unprofessional, but you saw what I did at work one day. So
right.
I've been doing that for a long time, and even like I said, to that day when I met you, it was, I said, God, I still want to do what I want to do with my music, but at certain times when my time is permitted, let me just use whatever you can use in me to speak to men or little boys and girls, because you don't know how many men are out here destroyed through sexual molestation. And they're walking around here, and they don't understand why they're killing and shooting everybody.
Yeah.
See, I understand the path now with the molestation, the bucking, the breaking. Please check out that bucking, breaking if you haven't checked that out. And this slave mentality is all built into the prison system.
And yeah, we gotta see. Oh my God!
Oh yeah, we got more.
The hour is already gone. The hour is already gone. My goodness. Wow. So,
I just want to say, Ms. One and Ms. Devin, just I want you ladies to know, y'all, yes, I'm the one talking, but I want to know, you know, the tears are really rolling down my eyes. Y'all are using me in the most beautifulest way I can ever imagine God can use me. And I appreciate both of you ladies for just giving me this opportunity. I really do.
Yep.
I thank you and I thank God for that.
We thank you, really, for sharing. It's your story. I can't wait till next week. And before we get cut off, everyone that's listening or who will listen, play it back, he will be back next week. And feel free to contact us with any questions, comments, or survivor stories. Direct number is 214-454-2933. Our email address is weareSurvivorsFoundation@gmail.com. We want to thank God for you listening, and we pray that something was said that touches your heart. We will be looking forward to you tuning back in next week. Have a great evening.